Good morning, everyone. If you'll get out your prayer on page 3 or on your app, and we'll pray together. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen. So as we begin, I'm going to ask you, once Chris gets things started, I'm going to ask you to, if you have a question, to wait until I can get the microphone to you, because we want to make sure we hear everything. And if that doesn't work, then we'll just ask the panelists to repeat your question. We only have one mobile mic, so we're going to try and work without it part of the time, at least.
All right, so you want to answer?
Do you want to start?
Okay. So what are some of the issues that are, temporary issues that are facing us as disadvantaged operators? So many things. I think you'll be able to hear me okay.
I always feel like it's so impersonal using a microphone, but I get it. If it helps, we will use it. For us, I think our biggest challenge and the thing that kind of keeps me awake at night is, how are we going to engage the people that are 50 years and younger? I don't know how many of you pull database statistics, but for us, 90% of our gifts come from people that are 50 and older. How is that sustainable? So just from a purely offertory standpoint, operations standpoint, that's our biggest issue. Obviously, there are other major things, liability, like insurance coverage is getting harder and harder to come by. Cybersecurity is one of those big things that I think we can touch on maybe in a little bit. But those are some of the issues. And obviously, engaging the young families, it's not just about getting them to give, it's about getting them on campus and involved and making that discipleship choice to be involved in your community. So those are some of the things that we're facing. And again, we're in a suburban, more rural area.
If I could, before I answer the question or the prompt, just to get a sense of those in the room, how many of you, just by a show of hands, are involved in a parish or sort of a family of parishes or conglomerate cluster, by a show of hands? If you're working with another parish, okay, and just a single parish by yourself. Okay. All right. Good. That's helpful, at least for me, to understand, because, as Mike sort of mentioned, in our family, we were 7 parishes going down to 6. And so I think, for me, the thing that keeps me up at night in terms of sort of managing the stewardship of these 7, now 6 parishes is, within the Archdiocese of Detroit, we have over 200 parishes and fewer than 200 priests. And so within our family, within our 6, we're really starting to feel the crunch when it comes to the sort of a shortage of clergy and the ability for our guys to meet all of the needs of the folks that are in our pews. So for us, we're at a critical stage where we're trying to sort of navigate the waters of choosing to manage decline or to choose a mindset of abundance, and really that's sort of the focal point that we are at in trying to decide what is the future of our family, and how do we sort of manage and meet God's people's needs where they are. So that for me is the thing that keeps me up at night.
Figure out if I should stand up or just sit forward. So I'm a single parish with the Diocese of Columbus. Columbus went through what we called Real Presence, Real Future, kind of through COVID and after, where they addressed the basically everybody got a red, green, or yellow light as to your parish. Some parishes were talked about grouping. Some parishes you got a green light, so you were a standalone. We were a standalone green parish. During that time, we had a bishop change. Bishop Brennan was our bishop. Now we have Bishop Earl Fernandez, who was in Cincinnati as a priest and now is with us. An interesting thing happened in Columbus after COVID. This little company called Intel decided to come to town. We are less than 7 miles from the Intel plant. So we're a little over 3,000 families. Right now we are adding 25 to 30 families a month because of Intel. Intel recently released that they financially were thinking about getting rid of their chip division, but the government gave them lots of money to build the plant. So people are still moving and all those other things. So for us, it's addressing, we were a pretty stable growth parish. We're in a suburban situation, not a lot of land to build. And now all of a sudden we went from, being in a Franklin County deanery to being, and our church resides in Franklin County, but now we are with the Licking County Deanery, because that's the deanery just a little north of us, trying to address growth issues and what it's going to look like and what Intel is going to bring to town. So we've had a huge increase in young adults, which, amazing, right? And there are lots of kids, and our 9 o'clock mass used to be older people. Now our older people are like, could you shut the babies up? Because it's insane. So we have put a lot of effort in addressing the needs of the young adults, bringing back play groups, bringing back, they went apple picking on Saturday with their families. So it's been a shift for us. We also are in a $20 million campaign to expand. There were needs before COVID, and then COVID caused us to do different things. So we're managing a lot of different balls as to what to get focused to. I have a very small staff. We have, like I said, over 3,000 families. I have 12 full-timers. That's it. And again, you know, it's like, where do you put your money? Do you put your money to staffing, or do you put your money to ministries and all the other stuff? Yesterday somebody said, you know, money equals ministry, so I'm going to take those nuggets back and see what we can do about that. So.
Hi, I'm Lois Losey, and I served as a business manager in three different parishes over a span of 25 years. All of them I would say were mega parishes in the sense of, that they were usually the top, income driven parish, in the sense of the offertory. One of them actually had two satellite communities. And at the time it was developed because the previous pastor did not want to be broken up into another, subdivided. So he created two different groups, and then under one parish management. I am now serving as a chancellor and chief operating officer. And I actually had developed a advisory group, of business managers to basically talk about what are the concerns and how we can address them. And some of them are sitting here and have told me not to disclose anything of what we talk about. But I can tell you what we're seeing, or I can see from my end and from the bishop's end, is that one is at this day and age, we have to really focus on mission instead of maintenance. And as we watch, in Florida, people are coming. Naturally because of our no state income tax, a lot of less restrictions. I mean, we were considered essential workers during COVID. And so because of that natural increase, our bishop has said that is not something that we need to take for granted, and that this is not for any hard work on our own, that we need to start doing real hard work, because otherwise, that abundance is going to disappear in just because of secularization. What I also see is that we have real people. Our business managers, our staffs are really, really dedicated, but they don't necessarily have the resources that they need to be successful, and so they have to make a lot of it up. So that's one of the things our group has told me, is please give us, you know, sound policies that have been vetted, right? But train us on it, and then let us just take it off from there and run it. Don't try to micromanage us, but just give us that guidance. So I would say that security is a big issue too. You know, just and that's just, you know, from getting grants to help secure our schools and our parishes to cybersecurity.
Thank you. So we're going to turn it over to you and have you ask questions of the panel. Anyone want to go first? No questions, come on. Don't be shy. What's some of your big issues or concerns in your parish?
I had to give a little chuckle because you said you have a small staff of 12 at your parish.
I know, sorry.
That,
sorry.
Full-time.
Yeah, full-time.
We have 10, but 3 full-time staff. And we are probably the largest and most active in our diocese, which is not huge. The Diocese of Scranton in Northeast PA. But the challenge, we built a church, thank God. You know, we went through a capital campaign. We have a beautiful new church. Actually, today is our 7th anniversary of our dedication. And we're still paying the mortgage. So as the business manager, I constantly remind myself that it is also a ministry. But balancing, we need more staff, but we can't afford it. And yes, with ministry comes the money that will follow, but how do you get there? How do you hire somebody else and not worry about, can we pay the bills? Because, you know, we do need all those extra things now, like cybersecurity. That is probably my biggest challenge, not squashing the other staff members and their ideas and what they want to do. How do we afford to the ministry and the personnel?
I can address that a little bit.
So as other people have said, for the Diocese of Columbus, we don't, and this is no bad shade to the office of the diocese, they've had a lot of staffing changes down there, and so there's not a lot of real support. So we're probably in all of the parishes we serve. Diocese of Columbus serves 23 counties. There's a large possibility that we will be merging, or Steubenville will be merging with us, so that makes a larger thing. You either have to do it on your own or you have to find partners. So probably 12 of us have a business manager's breakfast once a month. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, all you do is complain. But you need to do that, right? You have to do that because none of us in this room have unique problems. They're just different size problems. So from a staffing perspective, some people have found volunteers that the pastor has talked to them and said, hey, can you volunteer for just a little bit? We want to pay you. We want to get there. And one pastor in our deanery is very creative, and he gives them a stipend every once in a while. But then our foundation is great in Columbus that you can write grants for that to try to get the salary paid. Thankfully, my pastor and I are both of the same thought process. If I'm going to hire you and pay you, in 6 months, I don't want to have to say, I'm sorry, I can't afford you anymore, because you lose all of that. So we depend heavily on our volunteers, and it's hard because it's a volunteer job, right? They can say, I'm sorry, I'm going on vacation tomorrow, and, oh, I'm going to leave you on this big launch of an issue kind of thing. The other challenge we're having in hiring, so we've hired, of the 12, 3 in probably the last 18 months. They're young, right? They're under 40. And my other ones are older. They're ready to retire. Some should probably retire. And so now I have a staff that I'm trying to manage. The biggest ha-ha was we had a parish picnic. We were selling merchandise, that logo stuff. And I brought out a calculator, 10-key calculator, because you could buy a couple of different things. My young people are like, I'm just using my phone. And my one young person said to me, I've never seen one of these. What is it? So to try to manage two separate, and we're also supposed to be doing the same mission and goal. It's been a challenge for us, but we've tried to be creative, really look at and kind of have to say, I'm sorry, we always used to do this program, but the same 4 people, we have to get you onto something else and try to address the young people. We had a huge women's 10 a.m., Monday, Wednesday, Friday Bible study. No moms could go. So we found some volunteers. That's how I hired the one person I have now, is she kind of worked her way into that role. It's hard, and there's a lot of Father Dennis and I pray and say, oh, God, please just, you know, we're thankful that we have fairly large budget. We're in an upper middle class community. But it's still, I mean, I'm still running 40% what I call non-trackable givers, which means, you know, they're not electronic giving or not envelope giving. I used to call them zero givers, but we now call them non-trackable. So.
Anyone else want to respond?
Just want to share a little bit of our experience with Family of Parishes. Now, Family of Parishes, it's formal, but really it's a collaborative structure, right? So you're still running three individual parishes. We have found incredible savings in just sharing resources. I was on the diocesan team when we did like our Family of Parish restructure, so we were working in the background, and I was one of the few lay people on it, and I kept on calling it a restructure, and I kept on getting scolded by the CFO. He's like, it's not a restructure. I'm like, yes, it is. But anyway, there was benefits to a restructure, just like in businesses, right? You figure out how can you do it more efficiently. We right now have one person serving as DRE. We have one person serving as business manager. Just 3 years ago, we had business managers at every entity. We had DREs at every entity. You might think you've lost service, but we've actually gained because I think we've had the best ones rise up and help lead. And then we can, instead of having someone with the high level of education and skill set, we're able to have that person at the top and then have coordinators beneath them running. And we gained. And the coolest part about our individual situation, and I'm just sharing it because maybe this is maybe it'll resonate one way or another, is the third parish. We have two really high functioning, and we have a third that's very rural, very small staff, literally like one full-time staff person. We've been able to help build them up, and it's been a wonderful gift to them, but even a wonderful gift to me because the community is so volunteer-driven, which is not something I'm used to. I'm used to, you know, larger staffs, so there's a blessing there. So I think whatever we can do to stop parochialism and saying it's not, you know, St. Isidore against St. Therese, which kind of it was before because we were two parishes. So two of the main parishes of matter, St. Isidore and St. Therese, were about 4 miles apart. We were competitive. Like our knights wanted to know exactly how many fish fries were sold at their Lenten fish fry the Friday before. It was crazy. They would even get a sample. They'd go through the other person's drive through and bring and be like, this is what they're serving. I'm like, what is going on here? This is not what church is all about. It's about working together. So dropping that parochialism and saying, man, we can work together and do some amazing things. The biggest gift personally for me through this process, I didn't know anyone at St. Teresa's staff. I mean, Linda was on St. Teresa's staff, so Linda and I knew each other. But I didn't know any of them, and I am so motivated by the talent and the desire that exists just a few miles away, and now we're working together instead of against each other. So however that might play out in the areas that all of you serve, look and see how you can share talent. Because I think if you can combine someone, you know, even if you have a couple part-time people, but you can make them a full-time person, give them a little bit of a support staff, you can do some amazing things. And in our family of parish, we've really seen that benefit. And again, it was never in our dream until the Archbishop put that out there. So just wanted to share that.
Yeah, so considering volunteers and things like that, what have you all felt comfortable and seen be successful letting go to volunteerism?
Prior to me working for the church, I worked for the YMCA for 18 years, so we were another volunteer-driven organization. I treat them just like staff. I mean, you have to hire and put in place the right person. We do employment evaluations with them. We set goals. I mean, they have a job description. They're just like us, except they're giving their time and their talent with no treasure, right? I mean, we're not giving them anything. But it's not just the person that shows up at 9 o'clock that, well, could you try to maybe squeeze it? Just hiring good staff is like hiring good volunteers. It's the same thing. So.
Oh,
I'm sorry, I missed
that.
Yeah, I didn't find that.
No.
Sorry.
Have you felt
comfortable
releasing to
volunteerism, and where have you seen
it be successful? Okay. So certainly in, like, the question is, like, what areas have you found you're able to let the volunteers kind of run with? Is that okay if I kind of restated it? So for us, our job, the primary job of a business manager in the Archdiocese of Detroit is to find the lowest cost solution for any job. That's really the nuts and bolts of what our task is. So if you can have a volunteer do something that you were going to pay a staff member to, you should always. So in areas that, such as posting you know, like we have volunteer posters for the finances. You know, we do one staff, we still have a staff member in one place, but everywhere else it's volunteers that come in, do the posting. Our evangelical charity efforts, which is, evangelical charity is a term we use in the Archdiocese. I think it's synonymous with Christian services used, I think, more nationwide. Evangelical charity, certainly is run by people who have experience with volunteering and just want to see it do well. We have a paid staff member, but it's part-time. All of that is really, all of our evangelical charity is run by volunteers. What other areas? A parish that I worked for formerly, we had actually our front desk person was volunteer. We had an administrative assistant there who could answer the tough questions. But what better? I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this. Sometimes your front desk person is tasked with like 100 things. So it's hard for them to give full attention to the person who's calling in. So if you have a volunteer team that's taking those calls, those volunteers, they're kind of bored. They want to take those calls. They want to talk to people and they love your parish. So to have someone who's dedicated to just take some time with someone, tell them about why, you know, Parish X is so wonderful and you needed to come here. And while the tasks are getting done behind the scenes, that's a wonderful task, I think, to get volunteers engaged with. I'm sure there's other things that aren't just coming to mind, but certainly I think using volunteers for all they're worth is a really wise move.
For us, one sort of in one of the parishes within our family, St. Francis Cabrini has a high school, and so we have the ability to draw from school families. And so I would say almost all of our fundraising activities for the schools and also by way of the parish are run by our school families and parish families. So 100% volunteer from that perspective. The other is, this is somewhat unique and different from a ministry perspective, but all of our grounds keeping is all done by volunteers. And for those that are from the Detroit area, we get awards for how beautiful the grounds are across our 40-acre campus at St. Francis Cabrini. And so that is completely volunteer-led and managed. And so it's an incredible relief for us financially, but it really provides a true sense of service and purpose for many of our parishioners.
The only comment I would make in regards to volunteers is you have to be careful with maintenance because of liability issues, which I'm sure most of you know. Oh.
When I was at St. Mary Magdalene, now we had 20 people on the staff of the church, but we had over 4,500 volunteers. So the staff were not doing the ministries. They were basically volunteer coordinators in their field. So that is how we would do it. So it was an everything. And so it was the coordinator, the staff members who had to make sure that they were making sure that all the liabilities were there, the safe environment, instructing, having the job descriptions for each of the different positions, giving affirmation and evaluation. So there was not a place where we didn't have a volunteer, including our finances, including our maintenance, including our religious ed, and all that. So,
great, thank you.
Yeah. So, I wonder how you handle this. We have our bulletin, right, and we have all our ministries listed with the coordinator and their phone numbers. Also, have it on the website with each of our emails and stuff. Just that. Our pastor wants to be transparent, wants people to reach us anytime they want. The issue that's happening the last year is that when you put that stuff out there, then stupid scammers, I'm sorry, start sending and texting parishioners and these leaders and stuff, and they try to clone your email and try to, you know, send it to the parishioners. So one time we had a lady come in with $400 worth of Apple gift cards. Here's for Father. I was like, Father will never ask you for gift cards, and well, you keep them by whatever. at the end of the day, what we do now is we send every other month, we communicate to the parishioners that Father will never ask you for anything, you know, don't these old scammers, if you get a text, we'll never get a text from him on this, etc. But still, you know, it's never ending. So we've been going back and forth as to whether we remove the phone numbers and the names of the ministry leaders and just put maybe info at St. Agnes, for example, and have them. The only problem with that is now staff will get all the emails, the same way as taking all our emails out of there and just contact us, and it goes to a centralized location. But again, then we all have to manage that, and then so we go back and forth on it to see if we can minimize this. So the question to you is, have you encountered that, and do you have anything? Do you prefer to leave the names in there and deal with it, or just take them off?
Yeah, I think all of us could probably. Yes. And I remember when that first came out, and I immediately knew by the way what was coming out was only because we only had our people's first name and last initial at the time. And we were already issuing emails that were part of the parish. So we didn't let people have their own personal emails listed so that it would come to us, so that we could knock it off if we needed to. And then with phone numbers, we had a phone system where then we could assign extensions that then would like link to the person. So the scammers would only know the 4-digit, you know, so they'd have to do all those other things before you had to be a live person in order to basically contact these people. That's how we kind of tried, because we wanted to protect the privacy but still be transparent.
So we work with a third-party company. He's a parishioner. He's amazing. But they are using bots to scan everything on your websites. So at first we're like, because we did info at COTRNA. We did youth ministry at no names. And we still were getting people that were getting emails. Well, look at your websites and see how much you're archiving. Because if you're archiving bulletins for a very long time, those bots are going way deep into those bulletins, and they're just looking for things. So, you know, it was with the priests. The latest thing in our area is I got an email from an employee that I thought, "Hi, Sue, could you please change my direct deposit, blah, blah, blah." So I forwarded to my bookkeeper. This was a couple years ago. She reached out to said employee, blah, 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 and via email, right? Because we're like, oh, yeah, Sue Ann, blah, blah, blah. After we realized it, because Sue Ann called us and said, "Hey, Chase just called me and said you changed something." And we're like, "Well, yeah, you sent it." "No," you know, so that was a new layer of all this other stuff. This scammer he knew our pay dates, because we have employee applications out there that says we pay on the 15th and last day of the month. He called or emailed my bookkeeper as Sue Ann and said, "I didn't get paid today." I mean, they're creative. I wish they'd use it for good, because it's ridiculous. We are trying to scrub our website from everything and do info at. So like I get the info ats. We use PushPay as our provider for both money and CHMS. We also are able to do different things via PushPay to make all of that communication stop. But check your websites, because I went to my guy and I'm like, "Steve, how is this still happening? We took everything out of the bulletins. Father's email is not posted." And everyone thinks you got hacked, right? You got hacked. They're just looking. So go to your websites and see if you have archival information and pull it, because these bots are very creative.
I would encourage you to, it's not just limited to the parish, right? It's also, I would say, goes beyond just the parish, but also to your auxiliary group. So your Knights of Columbus, just on Friday, our Knights had to send out an email blasting the entire community to say, "Father Johnson is not asking you for Apple gift cards." So it happens often, and so while I would encourage you to scrub your own websites, but also encourage those other groups that are affiliated with your parish to do the same, because their information is just as much public knowledge there as it is at the parish.
Yeah, I was just going to add, and I think we need to be proactive. Scammers are going to be creative, so I think what you had said. Person with the question, what you said was, you know, you tell your people you're not going to do that. Get in front of that as much as you can. At St. Therese, we bring in our local prosecutor, who actually does, we bring him in once a year, and he does scamming seminars, because seniors are a top, target for scams. So I think it's a nice service to our community to do that. I've been on the phone. I don't know if you guys have been on the phone with people who've been scammed. They're just in tears, right? They can't believe that they fell for it. So whatever we can do, I think, to help be proactive in educating our people And then at the end saying, and of course we're never going to, right? Like, so you do something that's for them and then just remind them that this is never going to happen. People are going to find your email one way or another. I appreciate your guys' efforts. We aren't scrubbing our stuff. We leave everything out there. We leave our full bulletin archive. I'm not saying that's the right thing. I'm not encouraging anyone to do that. I just think it's a hard thing to get around. And I would definitely talk to an IT provider, talk to what they say are the best standards, current standards, and operate that way, and then be as proactive as you can in getting the word out.
Great.
So similar to the scamming, we at our parish, we just went through a scenario of the folks that copy checks. And it's like all of a sudden we had 10, 15 checks come through, and it's amazing how authentic these scammers make it look. So our bank, we worked with our bank, and everything, we were protected. They took care of everything. They actually noticed it for us, which I thought was interesting because banks are like us trying to find good talent to monitor their clients' activities. So they caught it for us, and then we instituted positive pay. So just, I don't know if anybody's familiar with it or haven't done it, but if you haven't, you probably need to look into it with your bank as a way to protect yourself. We have to send a file every AP check run, positive pay. And so they have an electronic way now of monitoring your check activity coming through. So if there's an exception, then we're notified immediately every morning, and then we just tell the bank if it's good or not. So so it's a partnership relationship with your bank. But if you bank with a small bank, that may not be available. You may need to, you know, hop up to a mid-sized bank or a larger bank.
Thank you.
Ryan Adams, Catholic Community Foundation, Archdiocese of New Orleans. So I, my title is data coordinator, data specialist. So I was here mainly to learn how to help you guys more, because I serve all the parishes. I do support for, we use ParishSoft, so I do all the like they call me instead of calling, ParishSoft to get support. So I guess my question is, if you could automate one thing, what would it be?
Only one.
Oh, yeah.
Only one. What's the top thing you would automate? I can tell you where we use automation. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a place to start.
So we use project management software to do our entire, like, our bulletin, and we use monday.com, and we use it for our social media company. So we have a social media company that comes in, pulls the stuff that way. We're not telling them what to do. They actually, their task is to come into our project management software and pull it out. Monday.com does a ton of automation. So all your email reminders, all those things. So I don't know if that's exactly what you're talking about, but those automations have helped us as we're trying to manage three bulletins, three websites, three social media platforms. That's where it's worked well in our realm.
We don't use Monday. We use Microsoft Planner, but essentially it's the same concept. I'm more familiar with Monday, but Microsoft is in our suite of tools, and so that's why our team is starting to adopt it now. It's still relatively new for us, but any sort of automation or standardization of processes, especially for us in an environment where we have six parishes, we have six different ways of doing things, and so, and even within those six parishes, we have a situation where you could ask three different employees and get three different answers. So that's really where we're at. So any automation of any kind, I'll take.
Ours is probably more from a diocesan level. We are not really allowed, besides payroll, to do any ACH paying bills. That's something the diocese does. It's a tremendous waste of time. So central purchasing, they send me a paper bill that I have to write a paper check, dual signatures, stick it in the mail, and postage. It's ridiculous. We could save a lot of time and money. And I've talked to the new CFO down there, and he's like, well, you know, it's old guard kind of stuff. But on the positive pay piece, they also monitor ACH. So you set your limits for ACH. And if you are one penny over, they will bump you. So.
Well, I was just saying, I think our diocese just
I believe we just did the ACHs for all our parishes and giving them the policies on that. So we're looking exactly that with things. I would say, what was that? Something that just recently found out that people were just doing it by hand, and it was just killing me. now I can't even think of it, but anything that really requires a lot of recording. Oh, I know one of the things that I heard just yesterday. Sacramental records. Because the concern, and I don't know how you guys do it with your families, but the sacramental records that are supposed to be kept by canon law forever, but in this day and age where we're merging and all this stuff, wouldn't it be great to have some type of central database or something like that?
Not to mention the sacramental books to write in are horrible, right? Horrible.
So this is a kind of a preventive maintenance question. So in our parish, we have a school that's 15 years old, so it's still relatively new in the grand scheme of our diocese. We're fortunate enough to have a new church that's 7 years old, and then we converted our old church to a ministry building. So now we're going from projects to kind of maintenance. And so one of the things I'm tasked with is to kind of search and find, you know, a good solid preventative maintenance program that we could put our school and all of our campus assets on so that we're being proactive in managing our dollars versus waiting for that AC unit to break and then spending gobs of money when we could have extended the useful life of it. So.
I've been at Resurrection for 15 years, and when I got there, they said, meet the new church that was already 8 years old. And I'm like, well, have you done this, 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 and this? Well, no, it's new. No, it's not new. So we partnered with a company called Reserve Advisors. They are out of Detroit area. They came out. We spent the money, and they do what they call an outside-inside envelope of the buildings. And they look at light fixtures. They look at carpeting, chairs, everything. And we have all of our buildings under that, including the rectory. And they tell you the useful life of this carpeting is so many years. This is what you need to accrue. I took it to my finance team, and I will tell you, over the 15 years, it's been tough because, like, right now we're accruing at $27,000 a month. And a couple of times in my 15 years, I've gotten a PFC and said, can we just do 6 months because to balance the budget, to do all the – nope, we're doing it. Like, you know, it's a whole adage, pay yourself first before you do that whole thing. We have been able to resurface, grind a $1 million parking lot without passing the basket. I will tell you that's also hurt us. As I said earlier, we're in a $20 million capital campaign that we're kicking off public in 2 weeks. We had not asked for money in 20 years. It hurts. Now, we have great reserves and all these other things, but people are like, $20 million, what do you need this for? And it's not for a church, it's for space, ministry space. We have a 40-year-old building that needs $1.5 million put into a roof, and it's silly money, right? So, but there's a ton. Reserve Advisors is one. If you go out and look, our diocese has a pretty well-built-out building and building and facilities. They're starting to come out and do that for the schools. Because it is, oh, it's hot in here. Well, pass the basket 4 times before we get the money to get the AC. We didn't want to be in that, or it's cold in here, you need a boiler or any of those things. But there's a bunch of companies out there. Reserve Advisors is just one that we stuck with, and we have had it updated every 5 years because we've added things, right? And because the $1 million parking lot I put in a few years ago, it needs work, right? And so we accrue. It's very hard to do, but you have to, if you can't do what they're saying, you have to put some money away. We have been able to convince a couple other larger parishes in Columbus to start doing funded depreciation is what we call it. And then we just hold it down in our parish aid funds down in the diocese.
Now, if you don't do that, one of the things that I used to do all the time since I began being a business manager is every year I would fund a certain amount per square foot of the campus. So if we had 94,000 square feet of building, and I think I started it out, you know, back in 92 at $1.25 a foot. and I would put it away, and sometimes we would be able to use it, and then every year, you know, we would increase it. And then if we had any overages, we actually came up with a policy where it would say, you know, a percentage of any overage would go to our salary reserves, anything for capital, anything for endowment. So we would divide it that way.
We use the Archdiocese of Detroit mandates a report. We use a company called AKT Peerless. They mandate it every 5 years, and it's a full buildings evaluation, but it's your main system. It's not as in detail as that you shared, which I think is a great idea. It's just your roof, your parking lot, and your HVAC, you know, or your heating and cooling, which are your primary drivers for huge capital expenses. And then they even give a build out with inflation on what it's going to take to maintain those facilities. So how I report back to our finance councils at all three parishes is I say, this is what we have in capital reserves. This is what our expected capital expenditures are over the next year, 5 years. And as long as that's 100% funded, we can do alternate spending. If it's not 100% funded, then I say we have to do that before we get into, like, these new projects and different things. You know, again, everyone has all these wonderful ideas, but you can only fund so many things. We make it a priority so we don't have to do the big ask. To me, it is a reflection of proper stewardship at the parish level. So we're saying this is how we do it. This is how we're going to be proper stewards. We're thinking of the capital expenditures as part of our long-term plan, and we're going to try to keep that funded. Again, I deal with some parishes that have some money. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to answer this question. I'm just trying to put myself in other people's shoes. If you're dealing with, say, $1 million in debt or $2 million in debt, because it's hard enough to get out of debt, right? You're digging out of debt, and then to also fund a capital expenditure account would be a challenge. I wish I had good advice on that, but I think that's something that should be on the radar both, because you want to dig out of debt as quickly as you want to put money away. Oh, and one other thing, we were talking earlier about the checking. So are making payments online. The Archdiocese of Detroit, I don't think they've still done a formal written policy that has allowed us to change, but they've done a verbal. So, well, I'm one of those people who kind of try to push our leadership into the right decisions. So we've been doing it for a long time at the parishes that I serve, but I just make sure our finance council understands that I'm doing something in violation of what the Archdiocese of Detroit says, but this is why. You know, it's for good. I'm not trying. I am very much a team player. I'm a proponent of all the things that Diocese is doing, but as an individual parish, I feel like I had the flexibility to move faster than them because they're going through some bureaucracy. I'm not a patient man, and I know what's right. So I went to my finance council and said, hey, this is what I want to do. This is why I want to do it. Will you sign off on it? I want to get a vote recorded for my own protection. And then that's how we move forward. And I did that at all three parishes. So now that the diocese is finally coming around, I'm like, phew, like I feel a little bit better about it. But sometimes as practitioners and people that are the lead stewards of our organizations, we have to make the decisions that we know are right and go through the proper. Don't go rogue and do whatever you want. But if you know it's a protection, build that in. And be bold about it. If you know that you're going to serve your people better by doing it, I would say go to it and work with your – I am very transparent. When I do this, I let our COO know and our CFO know that I'm doing it. So it's not like I'm some random person. But I tell them why, and I kind of try to work with them and hope lead them into the right decision-making.
After our third check washing incident, we sort of did the same thing. We didn't do it as eloquently as Chris sort of outlined it, but we said, you know, sort of enough is enough. We can't continue to wait for the diocese to get all of the policies ironed out and 100%, but within our family, we know how we can make this work, and we know what some of the pitfalls are, maybe not all of them, but we know what sort of the guardrails are, and so that's what we did. In terms of facility management and long-term planning, not a single one of my parishes today are doing accrual for future maintenance expenditures. The youngest church that we have is 56 years old. The oldest church that we have is over 100 years old. So that's a real problem. And especially when I referenced earlier that we have to choose whether or not we're going to manage decline or take an abundance mindset. That is all part of our sort of calculus in trying to chart out what our path is moving forward, because the amount of deferred maintenance that all of our sites have is astronomical. And it especially you put that in conjunction with the three parishes that have over $1 million of debt. One parish, St. Francis Cabrini, because of its school, when we first started was over $6 million. Now it's down to two. It's manageable, but for them, instead of putting $27,000 away for deferred maintenance, we're sending that money to pay off debt. And that has really strapped us from a staffing perspective, especially within our schools. So the list just sort of goes on and on. But if you can slowly start to identify what are those things, even just starting small is where you have to begin. And that's at the point, that's the point that I'm at right now, is starting small and trying to get folks to understand why that's so necessary. We can't balance, and for us, many of our churches have balanced their budgets based on fundraising. And during COVID, that bit many of our parishes very hard. And so they had to dig into savings. And so it's a domino effect. It's a snowball. So starting small is always the first step.
So in our diocese, we've been asked to cut down the number of reserve accounts we have. And so that's creating a kind of a different kind of talk with our finance council, which has always had that kind of mindset of plan for the future. And just like what you just said about COVID. So I wonder, are there any recommendations? If you could only have three reserve accounts, what should you set aside for?
Three reserve accounts.
Okay, I can think of two offhand. I mean, one, I would have whatever you want to have an operation, like monthly operational, right? Like just in case you have a downturn, a pastor change, a plant loss or something like that, something drastic. You always have to have that plan. I used to always say a quarter, but I think having 6 month liquid is an awesome, it's a luxury, but it's some. So I would have kind of an active general savings, have a capital expenditure account based on all your other things. The third count, I'm trying to think, I guess you could just send us the money at our parish. We'll figure out a way to do something with it. No, I'm teasing. Maybe a mission, like a mission based, right? Like if you have an opportunity, I mean, that's what we're trying to do, pivot from maintenance to mission. If and mission cost money, adopting a church in need, whatever, like if you're looking really to say, okay, this is what this money's for and you can't just have it in liquid, I don't know, that's an awesome problem to have, isn't it? And I'm trying to give ahead. I'm like, I've never thought about that, to have too much money. Then if I got down to two, it would just be a 6 month general savings and a capital expenditure account.
So we're about to tap out one of our salary reserves and just say, why do you have salary reserves?
COVID. That's what got us through COVID.
Yeah, I don't know if someone else, but yeah.
I mean, the two for us, those two are key. We don't necessarily, again, the financial position of the six, what was seven, none of our parishes have a salary reserve. So
for the Diocese of Columbus, we're not allowed to have external bank accounts besides our operating. So it has to be in a parish aid fund downtown. We can have as many of those as we want, but operating reserve is what got us through COVID. So I could pay my staff and no one had to take a salary cut or no money. Funded depreciation, and now, because I will be there soon, probably capital reserve. We've been debt-free for a few years, and so we've been able to build some of the other reserves. But, soon I will have a mortgage, so probably capital reserve.
I know I'm the one that probably created all your reserves. but I would say, capital would be number one. And I still feel strongly about having something for salaries because you never know. They used to tease me because I would say, you never know when a hurricane comes and levels everything, and you still have to pay your contracted teachers. So that's what the other thing I would say is, do something for ministry. And if they won't let you keep it in their diocese, the Catholic Foundation of St. Petersburg does allow all sorts of quasi funds and all that we'd be happy to be caretakers of it.
Really cool. It's our federal really cool thing. our COO and CFO are trying to think outside the box, and they realize that if we have money sitting, so we have a central, like, place where we keep, we're only allowed to keep, what is it? Because I always violate the policy. Sorry. I think you're supposed to keep 60 days in reserves, and I usually keep it a little longer just to have some flexibility. But our archdiocese is rolling out, and we get paid 1.75% on whatever money we have sitting. But our archdiocese is rolling out something where at least you have an option. There's like three different levels of investment where it's not an endowment, so you still have access to the principal, but three different levels of risk you can take on. So if you have saved money, like in our case, we're 100% funded with our capital expenditures, but if inflation goes more than that 1.7%, or 1.75%, we're losing money. So they're rolling out right now, and I give them a lot of credit because this was not something that came from the business managers. This came from downtown. Options where you can actually put your money away, still have access to your principal, but there's just some penalties with pulling it out early, but you can plan for the long term. So if you have money saved, but you know that plan, I think someone said they had, say, a 10-year-old building. Well, you know that 20-year mark is a dangerous mark, right? So you kind of want to have it liquid. You want it L1 by the time you get to 20 years. You can put it in a 10-year pool where you get a little bit more aggressive on your return. It could help pay against inflation. That's really the goal that that our archdiocese in office has. I had never heard of that, so I'm very excited because it used to be everyone put money into endowment, but endowment you can only pull 5.25 on a 3-year rolling average, so you really didn't have access to too much liquidity. Here you had full access to that. So I just applaud our diocese for thinking that way.
Right. One more question.
What diocese are you from?
Orlando.
Okay. I have a quick question before we finish up. How many of you are in your parish is individually incorporated? A good number of you? So that's something somewhat new to us in the Archdiocese of Detroit. If there is a legal issue, who pays the legal bill? Your parish does. Everyone?
The diocese.
Yeah, so interesting, isn't it? I just had a recent legal issue, and I kind of had to fight because it was really an insurance claim, and the attorney that represents the archdiocese wanted to take over and do some of the legal work, and I'm like, I'm not paying him. So I was just curious as to what you all do. Anyone else? Michael, anything else? So I'd like to thank our panel. Thank you for participating. This is always a great way to share information and learn what everyone else is doing. And it always seems like we all kind of have similar problems, similar concerns, and it's good to share how we resolve those issues. So thank you once again. Enjoy the rest of your day, and God bless you.